Hello and welcome back to the EV Cafe Takeaway podcast, that podcast focused on a zero emission future that we all hope for. And to inspire us in this hope, we have the wonderful Tanya Sinclair today, Electric Vehicles UK. And I'm supported ably by the lovely John Curtis. But Tanya, tell us, who are you and where are you from?
Oh, hello. Lovely to be here. I'm Tanya Sinclair. I'm the Chief Executive of Electric Vehicles UK, coming to you live from London.
Oh, very exciting. You're all in the big city. Oh, dear. So tell us a little bit about Electric Vehicles UK. What's the purpose of it? What's your hopes and aspirations?
Well, EV UK, which we'll call it from now on just to save ourselves a little bit of time. I think everyone's familiar with the acronym as well, but they should be by now, is a industry body. And we're only a year and a half old. But really what I noticed around the same time as Dan Caesar, who you'll know who set up EV UK, was that we're doing a lot of talking in this industry. And a lot of that talking faces the government. But at the end of every business, at the end of every policy is a driver. And there's a lot of drivers out there that don't have anybody to speak to them directly about electric vehicles and who don't have anywhere to turn when they've got basic questions. And the thing we don't want them to do is to turn to social media, because there are some quite unusual opinions and quite interesting ideas masquerading as fact on there. And so really the mission and the purpose of what we're doing is just being a point of contact to reset all of this fear, uncertainty and doubt guff that you hear about electric vehicles and try and come back to a little bit of fact and a little bit of sensible conversation.
Guff is just the best word ever.
Go on, John.
It's a scientific term.
When you've been around the industry a while, you know that, you know, there are lots of groups that purport to represent the driver. So EVA England, EVA Scotland, and so on, who have that direct connection. What's the gap that you feel? Is it in being the authoritative source of the truth, if you like, that one place that people can come to, and that you knit those other organisations into what you do, or are they completely separate? How does it work?
Yeah, this is a really good question. There is, first of all, there's a very important place for everybody. And if I can group the EVAs of the UK together, so EVA England, Scotland, Northern Ireland, and there is a Welsh one as well. If you're an EV driver, life for you is great, right? It's fantastic driving your EV, but there are things that you need improving. It might be the charging network. It might be the future of how you pay for your EV and how it's taxed. The EVAs do a really important job in representing me, because I'm a member, and everybody else who should be a member if you're driving an EV. It's £10, go and do it right now. We need representing as a growing group of drivers. Where EV UK comes in is we speak to and I'm going to guess there's about 30 to 40 million people out there. So, you know, we're just getting started, but who don't
all
drive
listening
EVs,
to this
probably
podcast.
Could. Yes, those 30 or 40 million people listening to this podcast don't yet drive EVs, but I think probably could. They could fit into their lives at some point in the future when the time comes for them to be able to get into a new car. That car could be electric, but they're, for whatever reason it is, they might be surrounded by, you know, a peer group that's not supportive. They've maybe heard things that make them feel that EVs aren't right for them. Those are the people that we're speaking to. And look, there is no one truth. I think this is a really important point that you talk about truth, because there is no one truth when it comes to EVs. What we do is try and give people a sense of how they're going to fit into their lives. So it's your truth, your experience, your lifestyle. So we do not purport to be experts. I mean, I'm anything but what I am is an EV driver with experience of living with an electric vehicle. And, you know, I don't have a drive. Well, I do. I just got a driveway, but don't have a charger in it yet. And, you know, so, you know, I feel that I've got experience that can be shared with people that are maybe uncertain about that next step.
And how are you moving that whole electric vehicles EV UK mission forward? It, you know, because obviously you need support. Everybody needs that sort of energy for, you know, to get into government, to, you know, to rattle cages, to get your opinion landed. I mean, like, just 18 months ago, you were a small organization. This is a growing voice in the industry. How are you growing your voice, and where are the people that you want to hear?
So you're right. We're young, 18 months old. We're a toddler that sort of is bobbling around and occasionally falling over, and in organizational terms. But you know, the business or the power that allows us to be able to do the work that we do comes from commercial partners. We're a partnership of anybody in the e-mobility industry who has a stake in wanting this sector to grow. So if you're a company, you know, it doesn't matter what you do, you don't have to do cars and chargers, you can do energy, leasing, whatever it is. If your business will benefit by a bigger e-mobility EV sector, then, you know, come and help us do the work that we do. And then what that looks like in practice is, you know, we do it. I'll start with talking about events, because events are the sort of visible tip of the iceberg. We've just come off a fantastic show in Harrogate where we were at Everything Electric. They're our sort of sister company. I do think that they're very, very mature and slick. And like I say, we're like the toddler with like crumbs in their hair and stuff. But we're getting started. And what we do, I don't think my colleagues will appreciate that at all. We go out and we talk to people, we talk to drivers about EVs. And what's so important about that part of our work is that firstly, everyone's a driver. So you might be a journalist, you might be a member of parliament, you might be a councillor, you might be a fleet operator, you might be an investor, but you are a driver. So by talking to you in your capacity as a driver, we are we're bringing everybody sort of on the same educational journey. And we are lobbying you, but you just sort of don't realize it. And then what we also realize is that this education process of ensuring that everybody understands the benefits of EVs, it doesn't stop once you get in an EV. So one of the most revealing things from our show at Harrogate is how much existing electric vehicle drivers maybe don't have the latest facts about what's going on in this industry, which is because it's moving so quickly. The prices are coming down, the numbers of chargers are going up, the range of choice of everything you can do with an electric vehicle is expanding. And if you've been trundling around in the same Renault Zoe for, like, I've had two Renault Zoes, so that's why I use that example, you sort of lose touch with how quickly everything is moving ahead. So you know, we go out there and we speak to everybody. And events are the visible way we do that, physically visible. But then in addition to that, we have media work and thought leadership and advocacy, which is, you know, a lot of the event stuff, but without that visible branding. So going a lot and talking to people and meeting them and explaining the importance of e-mobility education as a stepping stone to growing the EV sector.
That is a serious workload. I'm fascinated. How on earth did they identify you? How did the guy say, you know what, Tanya Sinclair, you are the...
What were they thinking?
Well, yeah, here's what we know. Here's what we know so far. You're a Renault Zoe driver who's had two of them, and suddenly you're chief executive of EV UK. There's a little bit of the story missing, is what I mean. And so what I'm trying to get to is, you are clearly a very capable communicator and a person who is passionate about what you do. But there's a hell of a leap from I drive a Renault Zoe to I'm the chief exec. How have you gone about your journey in this industry?
isn't that how everyone got their job? Just driving around in an EV and then...
pretty much. That's it. Cover blown.
And then Dan sees us like, yeah, I've got... That's basically how everyone's... No. It's very long. So, you know, sit tight. There's the... I've had a long journey. Now, I've been working in this industry for 15 years. So when EVs... Yeah, so it's just about 2011, 2012 time. I started working at Nissan, and I've got a background in political lobbying. I think lobbying has been like really maligned in this country. I mean, politics is never a... It's never, no one ever sort of says you work in politics and goes, oh, well done. You know, everyone's but really, you know, I'd worked, you know, my very early days, supporting companies in all sorts of sectors, re-employment, construction, things like that, to try and get face time with the government. And I think what's important about that is that, you know, you've really got to learn how to get the attention of people that for whom you're not the priority. And, you know, electric vehicles are great and we love them and they are always the priority for us, but they're not always the priority for everybody. No. Which I know it's the shocking thing. shouldn't be this way. Going to work for Nissan, it was a slight change of pace from that because, in many, many points in the time that I worked there, you know, Nissan was a national priority. You know, when you work for a huge manufacturer that is grappling with the future, it's bringing EV production to the UK for the first time. You know, it's got Brexit on the horizon. I mean, it was a hugely kind of tumultuous time. And so that really, but that, you know, I'm sure you hear it all the time. I certainly do. You get the bug when you start working in electric vehicles. But being one of the first people in the country to be full-time engaging with the government and setting out what this sector needs to grow and be sustainable in this country. That's definitely a surefire way to kind of get you the bug. government being what it is, you know, it's changing. Shouldn't be every 5 minutes, but it is every 5 minutes. You don't just make your case to the ministers about what this sector needs and then your job's done. You have to continue to do it. And lo and behold, here I am still doing it. So, you know, along the way, I've worked in, you know, different car manufacturers, charging manufacturers. And what I noticed to the latter part time of this work is that really the way that you get your message across is by being disruptive and being different and working in collaboration with organizations. You know, the government, I mean, just think about it from their point of view. You know, with a very few exceptions, nobody cares what in the government cares what the fate of one company X is, with a few exceptions. What they do care about is the success, being able to go and, you know, show off to their friends in the European Union, the other countries, that they're making a success of an entire sector. So what better way to help them do that by collaborating as an entire sector and telling them how they can make this sector a success?
If you operate a fleet of cars or vans, you'll know electric is the future. Transitioning to EVs can appear daunting, but with Europcar, it's effortless. Our long-term EV rentals eliminate the upfront costs, contract commitments, and uncertainty. Instead, you'll get total flexibility, a wide choice of cars and vans, and Europcar's expert support. So, make the switch without the stress and experience Europe Karma. Search Europe Car Business.
But the geopolitical world has changed massively. And Paul and I are just back from China. And back in the day, Japan was the way forward. Nissan leading the field in everything that was happening in transport. And suddenly, we've got this whole world out there, which the UK is not quite ready for. And it's interesting how even our existing drivers aren't yet ready to make the move to even the most basic electric vehicle. Yet just on the horizon, we have LiDAR 3, LiDAR 4. We've got technologies that will blow your mind, you know, fully autonomous vehicles. How do you keep, because those are two very different tracks of information and lobbying that you need to walk along. You've got the, we've got to look after everybody, nobody left behind, just transition sort of thing to electric vehicles. And then you've got the nerds like all of us who sit there and go, isn't it exciting? We've got a huge shiny thing over there, which is going to blow your mind. When actually, the simple things are the bits that are blowing most people's minds. Oh, electric. Oh, I'm not sure about that. So doing the basics is actually what we need to do now. But all of us in the industry are going, oh, shiny stuff. How do you ride both those horses? That's hard.
You've hit the nail on the head. There are two conversations going on. So, you know, this is sort of behind the curtain of EV UK, because if anybody knows about what we do, it's like having fun, education, information, gamifying knowledge to get people on board with the idea of learning more about EVs, with the, you know, with the expectation that the more you know, the more confident you'll get and you'll get into one. That's all the presentational side. Behind that, there is a serious conversation to be had with the government about their global trade posture, their approach to things like cybersecurity, their approach to manufacturing and home growing and industry versus relying on imports. And these are very active and very important conversations to have that, as you say, will determine whether we are on this train or like running to catch up with it. And I really think we're at that inflection point now where, you know, we have to come to terms with the fact that there will be a manufacturing sector in this country. There will be R&D, knowledge, engineering, skills, and all of that stuff, but it won't look the way that we in the recent past, that global leadership in those disciplines that we've become accustomed to, because China is already doing that. And that's not just the UK that has to come to terms with that, right? The US is also in that position as well. And I'd say most of Europe. So, you know, it's not like you've won or lost, but, you know, we've got to accept now, and you will have seen in China that they are light years ahead. The front of the train is light years ahead of the back, yeah. where we are right now.
Yeah, and what I found really interesting over the last, I don't know, probably 6-8 weeks, I mean, we're talking a really sort of effectively a short period of time, is that visible kind of partnering. And you mentioned the word collaboration and disruption. Those two things are happening at ground level in terms of what who we're talking to and how we're doing that, but it's also happening on a global stage as well with Ford and Jiangling Motor Corporation producing, and of course I would talk about the van, wouldn't I, but you know, the new Transit City. So that's been a partnership. I just read this morning Donald Trump is heading off to China. Who saw that coming? Not me, I have to say. I thought he was, you know, all for, you know, sticking two fingers up at them. But no, he's kind of recognizing. And I wonder if that's back to his business sense. His core, he is a businessman, right? And for whatever we think about him, you know, he's managed to build an empire business-wise. And I wonder if he's just kind of being very careful on that front. But you mentioned British involvement, Europe, we're all very keen to have it on our local shore. Do you think that's really possible given the scale? How do we get space for the likes of the BYDs, Cherries, Geely to come into the UK and manufacture here and bring that technology here, but do it on our store doorstep with jobs for the boys, you know, for the men and women of our community? How do we make sure we're just not, you know, left buying this stuff in because it's great?
So the part of this conversation that I find frustrating is how much we leave out when we talk about cars and car manufacturing. Absolutely, there is no e-mobility sector without cars. everything that relies on a car in the EV sector, you know, the cars need to be built and they need to be driven for this sector to thrive. However, you know, the EV sector is so much more than building cars. And it's really important that we sort of shine a light and don't forget that there is an ecosystem and an innovation pathway that is so exciting in this sector outside of the vehicles themselves. So, you know, when I look at the partners who are part of EV UK, even if you just take the charging stack, so you've got, you know, hardware manufacturers, CPOs, MSPs, you know, people that are just doing software, people that are just doing roaming, you know, you name it. There's so much technological development happening that is a lot of it is homegrown in the UK, and a lot of it is like an exportable, scalable business that started in the UK. And then beyond that, you've got, you know, energy products and you've got leasing products and salary sacrifice and entire businesses built around the fact that, you know, EVs are growing in number. And I think when we just talk about manufacturing vehicles and jobs coming from that sole pathway, I think we're missing a trick in explaining that there's much more to this sector and much more opportunity and not just jobs, but, you know, value to UK PLC from growing exciting new business models out of the UK. So, you know, I don't see it as a, you know, as something as like, you know, who's going to move in if this factory closes down, because we've got much more development and diversification opportunity coming out of the sector than the vehicles themselves, which, let's be honest, irrespective of who's building them in this country, they can be built and imported for a reasonable kind of cost from other countries as well.
Yeah. It seems that EV UK are really able to sort of step back and take that helicopter holistic view of the market and see what is important for the sector, not just the vehicles. It's a great view, and obviously it's one honed over the many years that you've been doing this kind of engagement with government, engagement with the market, and as an individual, you personally. But I'm curious because, I don't know, many times when we're at school, we don't look out at the big wide world and think, I mean, no, I don't, forgive me, but I don't know that anybody thinks these days, I want to go into politics or anything related to it. How did you get there? What was young Tanya dreaming of at the back of the class, or probably the front of the class, to be fair? You were one of the people at the front.
Spot.
I was at the back.
You've got my number. Oh, yeah. Well, that's where it starts, like being an absolute nerd. No, I think, you know, you learn about your kind of skill set as you go through. So you know, very rarely, I think it's actually very interesting that you are at the sort of tender age of 14 meant to understand yourself to the extent that you know what you want to do for the rest of your life and then choose your subjects and choose your university if that's the pathway you go down. I mean, it's absolute madness when you break it down like that. But I nevertheless managed to stumble upon it. And I think, you know, so I did history at university. So what on earth are you going to do with a history degree? So that's a kind of blank canvas upon which to work out. I got into politics because when I was studying, I got an email sent around saying, do you want to work for a member of parliament? And I was like, okay. You know, it beats, like, you know, my dad's in the motor trade, and I used to process the parking tickets from his rental fleet at the weekends, and I was like, oh, working in parliament sounds a bit better than processing parking tickets. About the same. No, again, just like EV is a bug, you know, politics is a bug because you see problems that you need fixing. And I think that's kind of, if you can characterize, you know, what kind of gets me out of bed in the morning, ready to attack the day, it's seeing things that need to be fixed. And I'm going to butcher the principle of Kaizen for you, but at Nissan, it's kind of very embedded in the, but you know, I've in the way that they, you know, they say that they approach their business, which is that continuous improvement is, you know, it should be embedded across all your practices and all your processes. I don't adopt it as a principle so much as I don't ever look at something and think, yes, we've finished that. You know, there's always something that can be improved. There's always something that can be fixed. And, you know, that goes for like, you know, parking the car this morning. It wasn't quite right. So I redid it. But, you know, or it could be the EV sector, or it could be, you know, my own organization. You know, there's always a way to make something better. And, you know, once you get into politics and once you get into EVs, I don't think we will ever be at the point where we fixed everything and everything's quite right. So yeah, that's how you get into this combination of politics and EV for life.
So let's scratch the surface just a touch. You talk about fixing problems. What three problems are EV UK focused on fixing right now?
Okay, really good question. I'd say I don't like to talk about misinformation as such, because, you know, there's everybody's truth is personal to them, but there is a lot of outright bullshit, can I swear?
Go for it.
The last time we said yes to that, we had a whole different set of language, so that's fine.
Oh, yeah. We had somebody drop 6 C-bombs in one sentence. I kid you not.
Oh, my God. I don't. I swear that I will try not to do that. I promise to try. No, there's a lot of... And what's so pervasive about this misinformation is that it's a lot of it is deliberate and a lot of it's a product of the media ecosystem and the internet ecosystem, in that the media ecosystem relies on clicks and on eyeballs, and, you know, saying EVs are great and wonderful is not how you secure those. And then the internet has got this sort of state of permanence about it, whereas, you know, when you put something on the internet 15 years ago about an electric car, it somehow becomes gospel. And so, you know, there is a really important ongoing problem to course correct all of this misinformation, some of it deliberate, some of it just there. And I'm not pretending that me and the 1.5 other people that work with me at EV UK have that power. It's about making people aware of this and having everybody work with us to address the misinformation. And then I think that the second problem is probably getting people to work together. So like I say, in this very long time I've been working in this industry, you know, the diversification of what we do has been great. You know, back in the, was like, there was a car and there was a charger and that was it. The charger was a plug on a stick. And now there's, you know, there's all sorts of technology innovations that have created their own businesses. What we're slightly in danger of doing is siloing and blaming each other. Now that is absolutely just, you know, not the road that we want to go down. So, you know, for any problems with, say, vehicles, to blame the chargers, as like the sales aren't strong enough because of the charging, or, you know, charging, there's a problem because of the energy or whatever, that, you know, I don't know, because I'm not interested in it. We are, in the truest sense of the word, an ecosystem, and we have to work together. We rely on one another for our success. So why are we slagging each other off all day? I really fail to understand it. It's not, you're not hurting anyone but yourself. So getting people on board with the idea of working together is probably the, and that is a problem to solve, because, you know, some people get it, but some people don't. So we're working on that. And then the third one, let me think, because those two keep me busy, you see. So I think of a third problem.
Wish I'd gone for 5 now.
Yeah. Oh, we'll be here all day. No, I mean, the third problem, just to be kind of completely candid, you know, we talk a lot about kind of the work that we do. I'm also trying to build a sustainable company here as well. So I think it's not a problem so much as a sort of work in progress. And there's this kind of really startup-y California phrase about like building the plane while you're flying it. You know, that literally is what we're doing. It's sort of, you know, we're in a real kind of, I'm not doing this just because I like to talk about EVs, although that is most what I do and what I like doing. You know, I want this to be a business that can continue to grow and can solve bigger problems and do things bigger and better for a longer period of time. And if we don't put the basics of building a business in now, within my first year, it's been about 6-7 months I've been doing this job, then I'll just be, you know, I won't be doing it this time next year. So that I think is it's a kind of little bit of it's not really a problem as such, but it's something that I do spend my time addressing.
Well, it's interesting you say that, Tanya, because I think any business, and you know, arguably the EV Cafe are in a very similar position in continually growing. We've been around for just over 6 years now, so it's a bit scary really, but unless you're moving forward, unless you're building, unless you're considering your options and, you know, making sure the foundations are secure and that you've got some sort of financial basis for a future, then, I mean, that does definitely, if you haven't got it, it's definitely a problem to solve. So it's almost like proactively solving the problem, isn't it? And because it sort of speaks to me of the origins of EV UK in that it seemed... And forgive me if I've got this wrong, and maybe Dan will tell me, no, it's not that. But it sort of came out of Everything Electric, Fully Charged, as many of us will know them originally, but Everything Electric, and the events that they put on and the opportunities that they kind of bring to the market for people like you and me to go and test drive things and experience things firsthand, great speaking sessions, all of those good things. Talk to us a little bit about that sort of, I don't know, that birthplace of Electric Vehicles UK being Everything Electric and growing into sort of a separate organization to kind of be more independent and an independent voice.
Yeah, this is such an interesting illustration of kind of how the world is moving on. And it's a real product of some, you know, sometimes you just need this kind of genius brain of as someone who's kind of just ready to jump in and take a risk because they see a problem and they know they've got the solution for it. And that's exactly what Dan does like every day. And it's so amazing to kind of have happened to be there at the start of this and then now helping him kind of realize that vision, because the problem that he identified, or the opportunity, I should say, because it wasn't a problem, it was definitely an opportunity, was that Everything Electric has really nailed the how to talk to people about cars and electric cars. And it got, you know, disruptive tone of voice, brand that cuts through, but it's for, to use a marketing term, it's for hand raisers. It's for people that are already seeking out that content. It's for people that like cars and people that are interested in them. But then how do you speak to the millions and millions, like I say, the millions of people out there that aren't car people, aren't seeking electric car content, but could be getting into electric cars? So it really is just kind of a natural transition for the Everything Electric brand identity to then face a new audience. And it just so happened by coincidence that Dan had kind of, you know, seen that opportunity. I'd seen it too, but I don't know how to fix it because I didn't have a YouTube channel. I didn't have this amazing business, right? I was just like, yeah, someone should do something about this. And then lo and behold, Dan was doing it. And what I brought to the table, I hope I bring to the table, is what I was doing at the time was consulting, helping membership bodies and associations become more commercial. So there's kind of characteristic in the trade association membership body space that there's sort of kind of a little bit sort of do the same thing. They take the money off the members, you know, they'll write some letters to the government, they'll do some events, and then like off they go. But you know, we're in straitened times, and if you want to, you've really got to work for your members' money and trust these days. So I did a lot of advising, not in the EV sector, outside of it, and rail and hospitality, places like that, about, you know, how to be commercially attractive and how to get people to want to part with their money for you to represent them. And so, yeah, we sort of just happened to meet at the right time. And, you know, he had this, you know, I could see that there was a lot of talking, but not facing in the right direction. Like I said, not facing the driver. And a lot of companies that do want to talk to drivers, but as companies, all they can really do is market, right? They can advertise and they can market their products and services. What we're talking about with EV UK is talking to drivers without selling to them, without marketing to them, before they're ready to buy, before they're ready to be sold to, right? And so, you know, that's where the tone of voice, that very just plain English, you know, disruptive, you know, listen to us, you know, because we've got experience of this stuff. It really helps complement that mission to reach drivers and to support the industry partners that we work with.
Yeah, and I think that was really evident at Harrogate. You know, your presence at the Harrogate show. And I, just as a quick aside before we go to the next thing, but I loved the fact that you accosted the local taxi driver, and I think planning on a little content series, I think, which will be really exciting. And I love that kind of intervention, right? Because, you know, it's great to dive in and go, hey, tell me about this. And it was a really amazing story. But EV UK front and centre at that Harrogate event. But also, we've got a couple more events. Tell us about the next couple of events. And I know that you'll be there creating more content, which is that sort of educational, dealing with the misinformation, celebrating the good kind of stuff, but also speaking in on stage, I guess. I think we might be together again for the next one. But yeah, talk to us a little bit about the next few events.
Yeah, and I won't go in chronological order just to kind of keep everyone on their toes, because it's better to talk about it thematically rather than chronologically. So we'll start with Everything Electric. There are three Everything Electric shows this year, and they're very sort of life affirming, because it's just pure kind of everyone's there just to have, you know, just to have a good time. And they're very open to talking and open to, you know, being given pick and mix, which is also what we do in our stand. So we keep everyone very happy. And the next one's in Cheltenham. And the one after that is in London. And yeah, honestly, it is so worth the day. So the first day on the Friday is more business focused. The second day is for families and anybody. I mean, anyone can come at any time and just take a test drive. Come and talk to us. We do a lot of games and kids activities and things like that. It's just an all round kind of opportunity to not be talked at. Just talk with people. And I think that's where the value is. Because if there's something that you get a lot of in your EV education process is people talking at you, especially if you're coming off social media, there's no interaction there. You've just got people telling you. So that's I'd say the kind of the sort of bedrock, if you like, of our shows. But then we take that format out on the road and we go to we just pitch up in city centres. So where there are local authorities that want to work with us, we will come to your town. And so we're going to Manchester and we will be outside Selfridges in Exchange Square with cars.
Super cool.
I mean, we're trying to work out, which might be free ice cream. We're not sure yet. Like we'll work something out. But we, you know, and by the way, this is not out the goodness of our heart. You know, we talk about in charging, maximizing dwell time. That's the thing here as well. So kids activities, and free food and drink and things like that. That gets you coming to talk to us for longer than you otherwise would. So, you know, we really do, you know, there's a real method behind the kind of the fun exterior of how we position these events. And then I'd say the one that I'm looking forward to all of them, but the one that I'm excited because it's we're bringing it back for a second time is the ones that face the politicians. So in addition to being an outside Labour Party conference in Liverpool, assuming they're still the government in September, that we'll be there. And then we're also coming to Parliament. So our format with parliamentarians is really valuable because we pick them up from outside Parliament in an EV and we drive them around and then we drop them off. And, you know, that beats hands down sitting in a meeting room and talking to them about an electric car. And you would not believe the amount that get into the car and say, oh, never been in an electric car before. And, you know, off they go back to Parliament to go and make some laws on electric cars.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the you know, it just goes to show just how much work there is to do. But again, even the existing EV drivers have got a role to play here because the ones that we speak to who already drive EVs, they're sort of quite, I think it's a credit to the industry that it's so normalized for them, but they really do underestimate their role as advocates. They should be going and telling their peers, their fellow MPs. They should be going and telling their constituents. They should be going putting pressure on the local council. They're the member of parliament. They've got an opportunity in the authority that they hold to be that advocate. So whether you've been in an EV or not, MPs, we will drive you around. And we will tell you that, you know, they have an opportunity to really kind of make a tangible change. And as you know, so much of this industry relies on local changes at local level, local councils. And, you know, this is a national policy that needs to improve, but also there's, you know, 400 odd incremental local bits of policy and regulation that need to improve as well for us to see a change that will benefit drivers.
Yeah. And sorry, I know that I'm talking a lot, but I wanted to reflect back on the last one I got involved in, right? So it was that part, pick up the parliamentarian, bring them over to, it was a hotel on the South Bank. I forget the name of the hotel. It doesn't matter. But we got some vans there. So that was great news, right? So we were there for that. But there was one important character, and I just want to remember him if we can. Just Quentin Wilson. What a wonderful guy. He was fully behind this. And that was the last time I saw him. Because it was only just a few months after that he passed away. And do you know what? He was full of energy for that cause. He must have been quite ill, but he was still full of energy for that cause, still communicating. And you could see the value that he brought. I mean, speak to that gap, but also what are the opportunities, you know, for others to draw others into the industry to be that voice of influence and take it beyond the normal?
Yeah. Well, first of all, there's no filling that gap, right? Going to have to just work. We're just going to have to like make do and do our best. And you're right. This event is, we're going to feel his absence because he was there. But the thing that I am, you know, the thing that I can bring to the table in terms of trying to kind of continue the work that he did is impatience. Because this is when I think about, you know, and you know, we, you know, what he showed up that day, furious and frustrated and impatient that more MPs were not, like, he wanted queues out the door. It was also the hottest day of the year, and that's a working day in Parliament, right? But you know, we will do it justice by having queues out the door this time. But you know, he wanted everything to happen now. And I think that's a really good mindset to take. I'm constantly extremely impatient about why things take so long to do. You know, working, you know, in the charging industry, I sort of just was like, what do you mean it takes time to install a charger? You know, it's the reason we're impatient is not because we're not, like, I'm not grounded in reality. It's because we know that the benefits will flow from, you know, more vehicles, more chargers, bigger, you know, this industry being bigger and better, and we can see the potential. So I think that that's definitely the quality that I can try and continue. And if we're complacent and we just assume that someone's getting on with it, it's just not going to be done. So yeah, being impatient and keeping that constant pressure on everybody, industry, government, ourselves, to ensure that, you know, we're continuing to grow this sector, that I think that's probably the part that he can hopefully be proud of us.
It's the tribute, isn't it? It's the tribute to Quentin that we carry that impatience, that determination, that frustration, and that brutal bluntness from time to time. Anyway, we'll leave that there, or we'll be getting back into the words, the aforementioned words. John?
I'm just fascinated, Tanya, by your relentless happiness. You have sat with a smile on your face through this whole interview. You laugh, which is something quite rare. You know, we do a lot of podcasts, 160 odd. I can't remember somebody who's actually laughed as many times as you have on a podcast. And we do a lot about mental health. It really matters to us that people are enjoying what they do and they're as well as they can be. How do you stay so darned positive when you're driving the hard yards of trying to convince consumers that EVs are the right way to go?
Yeah, I'm going to be quite controversial about this, because having said that this is all important and we need to, you know, we all need to keep the pressure on and we all need to work hard. When I worked at ChargePoint, at one point I had 7 people. We were all in different countries around Europe. We were all lobbying different governments to varying degrees of success, not because of the team, but because of the governments, about, you know, improving EV charging. And it was a lot of traveling and it was a lot of running around and it was a lot of late nights, because you had to go and report back to California from, you know, Poland or wherever you were that day. And I did, you know, when I saw people becoming frazzled, you know, I did say to people, look, this isn't, you know, this isn't fixing the ears of broken ears of kittens. You know, this isn't heart surgery. It's not even rocket science. You know, we are talking about the regulation mandating, you know, whatever it was to do with electric car chargers. You know, there are bigger things in life, and you know, it's absolutely, like, what a credit to this industry and a credit to the company that you care about it so much. But also, just take a step back, and it's like, there are bigger things in life. And I think that just not being so bloody serious all the time, I think really does, it really does help, with a very few exceptions. You know, in jobs that people do, we don't have to be so serious all the time. And you know, what we're doing, and this is what I always used to talk to when I used to go in and see government ministers, especially in transport. You know, if you think about the transport portfolio, you've got ports where there's like a huge kind of, you know, loads of issues. You've got air travel, loads of issues to fix. Trains, I mean, don't even get started with the problems with trains. And then we would come in and we'd be like, look, that, you know, you get this like bedraggled advisor, like, what do you need? Like, you know, getting the checkbook out. So you don't need anything. We just want to tell you some really cool stuff that's coming up. And we want to give you the opportunity to be able to be a partner in a growing, exciting industry. And, you know, we didn't always have to bring bad news. And, you know, even today when we talk to ministers, you know, it's just fun to be, you know, driving around in cars that are, you know, there's no downside. You know, if you've got the privilege to be able to get into one and to drive one, you know, you happen to be doing good for the planet if that's what you want to do. But it's also just a great car to drive. Like, just there's just no downside to it. So we just try to have fun with what we do. And you know, I think, you know, everyone kind of gets fulfillment in different ways. But like I say, I get fulfillment in fixing things that need fixing. But, you know, I get to also, you know, talk about really fun products and services as well that I think are exciting and are bringing, you know, they're improving people's lives. So, yeah, lots to smile about.
You do it very engagingly.
And do you know what? The funny thing is, So when we were setting up in Harrogate, you and Charlotte were, let's go with noisy, because you were always...
Because
you were always laughing. You guys were having a great time doing a difficult job, putting up a tent for the first time, maybe. I don't know. I can't remember if it was the first time or not.
Sorry, but... Paul, can I just interrupt you there?
Yeah.
It's a semi-permanent inflatable structure. It's not a tent. Wow.
It was
okay,
impressive.
Sorry, but yes.
It was impressive, anyway.
Ignoramus. So,
but you did it with joy. That was my point.
Yeah. No, we like what we do. And you should have seen us taking that semi-permanent inflatable structure. You should have seen us taking it down in the rain. We're laughing slightly less, but we're still laughing.
Well, listen, for that reason and for reasons of tradition, we will present you with something very special right now. Because as we get draw to the end of the podcast, we have a little closing tradition. And you've earned your use of said tradition. And because it is the Evie Cafe Magic Wand. Da-da-da. And this is, as once used by Harry Potter, as you can see, little lightning bowl, all freshly designed. It's coming your way. So brace yourself and get ready to take it in. There we go. It's all yours. She's got it. Both hands. Fabulous. So the Evie Cafe Magic Wand.
I need
wand,
it.
So you need it. What for? Tell us. What do you need that Evie? What one wish do you want to exercise right now?
It's the impatience thing. I want this one to speed up time and so we can do things bigger, better, and more quickly. I've got so many ideas, so many plans, and it's just a matter of we've got to keep putting one foot in front of the other, but I want to, start running at kind of hyperspeed towards doing all of that stuff. So yes, wand is necessary.
Oh, we love that. I love the fact that you were totally ready for that. Normally, it's like a long, there's not a long and protracted process, but it's, fabulous. And I agree with you. I would have more time to be able to do it bigger, better and quicker. I think that would be a great thing to do. Tanya, this has been a joy, hasn't it, John?
I'm exhausted. You two, I think you could power the national grid, you two, if we just stuck wires in your ears. I actually think we'd solve all the DNO connection issues, just have a Paul and a Tanya.
I really could do with that. Like some mornings, just a little shock therapy. Wake me up in the mornings, it'd be great. I can't believe we didn't talk about... Sorry, go on.
All I was going to say was I don't think you need any input. I think you're purely... output. There's energy just coursing through your veins.
That's coffee. That's actually
what have we missed?
I was just gonna say, Paul, we didn't talk about vans. I'm a van person. I can't believe it. And we didn't talk about taxis, but anyway, I'll come back. Invite me back. We'll just do vans and taxis.
We will. But the thing I take away here is that we've got somebody facing government, parliament, parliamentarians that... So I'm not that person that can be patient with their nonsense. I'm not. And so
or
I'm
indeed,
not...
with anything.
Yes. Yeah, fair. And I get very frustrated. I shout loudly, albeit through social media, or... actually, I will sort of doorstep a little bit if I get the opportunity. I'm not the most diplomatic and I don't understand the processes and the time it takes and all of that sort of stuff. So I'm eternally grateful for people like you that are able to voice with knowledge and understanding and diplomacy and tact and all of that good stuff and an element of joy, because I just I get desk banging angry with the nonsense. We've waited far too long for this 4.25 ton legislation, which actually, as we're recording today, it got done yesterday. And finally, for goodness sake, I think my social media post said this has dragged on a bit, but... So I'm very grateful for people like you that are able to
properly voice in a sensible way with joy, passion, insight, knowledge, and some great words. I mean, I almost listed the words that you use, inflection points and pervasive, and I mean, some great words. I mean, I just don't have the brain power. And you,
I was at the front of the class, I told you.
Exactly. Nerd, I was throwing stuff at you from the back.
Sorry.
Oh, dear. But no, so I'm very grateful for people like you in our industry. And thank you for mentioning vans and taxis and working vehicles, commercial vehicles. They are very, very important. I'm glad you reminded me, because that means that when you're in front of government and you're not leaving them off the table, which many people do.
Oh, never. I mean, my background is in vans and taxis. So when I was at Nissan, you know, I did a lot of work on Leaf, but, you know, the main thing I did was with the EMB 200. And, you know, and I saw when I worked at LEVC, you know, if you can get a black cabbie to love an electric vehicle, you can get anybody to love an electric vehicle.
Absolutely.
And I saw it. And I think this is where I really got where the penny dropped for me was working there, because these people that say that they don't want an EV or it's not going to work for them, you know, they haven't, you know, you just need to speak to someone that works with one, not just has it to go to the supermarket at the weekend, who works with one every day and it does work for them. And then it starts to kind of take shape a little bit. So I do think that they are the absolute key to unlocking the hesitancy for other drivers as well. So yeah. Well, they'll never forget about vans and taxi drivers.
There we go. So we're gonna edit this podcast, and it's gonna be about 2.5 minutes long. And that was it.
Perfect. Easy
there
job.
There we go. It was easy done. Snip, snip. Job done. Tanya, it's Perfect. Been a joy. We're going to put all the links
so
for EV UK, for the Everything Electric events that are coming up.
Yeah,
and
brilliant.
If you want to give us dates for other things, like you're appearing in Manchester in Panto on such a date, then please let us have those dates.
Could you tell I didn't have the dates in front of me? Could you tell? Because I just couldn't remember any of the dates. Anyway, so yeah, so I'll send
June
them across to you.
Is the important one for people, but they'll be all in the show notes.
There's others. And Ixus is a lot in June, July and August. So I was just like, oh God, like I'm going to get them wrong if I try and remember.
But even exactly. that, even that you polished, because you're like, well, I'm not going to do this chronologically. I'm going to do it thematically.
Honestly, the politician's answer.
What
I'm not going to answer your question. I'm going to answer the question I want to answer.
On that joyous note, folks, we're going to call it a day. It's been lovely talking to Tanya, and we've had lots and lots of other conversations that you can tap into on the EV Cafe Takeaway podcast. You can join Tanya and the team at Everything Electric on the 11th and 12th of June. Or is it the 12th and 13th? It is the 12th and 13th of June, 12th and 13th. Friday is the business to business day, and Saturday is family fun day. But pick a mix, available for all on the EV UK stand. Wonderful. Follow us all on the socials and all of that good stuff. But until next time, everybody, have a lovely day. And take a little bit of the joy that you've just heard into that day.